It's the 13th of December 2012, the day Peter Jackson's film The Hobbit is finally released. Based, of course, on the book by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, I don't doubt it's going to be a huge success. It's going to be seen by millions around the world, and it's certainly putting New Zealand on the map again. But although the film was made in New Zealand, the real Middle-earth, the inspiration for Tolkien's stories, is right here, where I'm standing now, in Birmingham, England. I'm Larry Rue. I'm an actor and theatre director, born and bred in Birmingham. And actually, I auditioned for the role of the Mayor of Lake Town in the new Hobbit film. I didn't get it. I lost out to Stephen Fry. Well, fair enough, I can live with that. But what really gets to me is the way that Birmingham's legacy has been usurped by another city on the other side of the world.
The last time Wellington saw scenes like this was at the premiere of Return of the King in 2003, a single event which injected more than $8 million into the local economy.
Last month, the Mayor of Wellington officially changed the name of that city. And for the week of the film's premiere, it became known as the Middle of Middle-earth. Now, I do have a bit of a problem with that. For a start, it's inaccurate. So, over the next half hour, we're going to celebrate Tolkien's life here in Britain's second city, Birmingham, and try to reclaim the title of Middle-earth. To begin our unexpected journey, we're going to visit some of the locations that inspired the books, starting with the annual Middle-earth Weekend, held every May in Moseley, South Birmingham.
I'm Vivian Wilkes. I'm chairman this year of the Middle-earth Weekend organising group. Started off with sort of a couple of tents and face painting and a little bit of play reading adapted from his books. And it's got now to the size it is today, and we do performances in Moseley Bog, and we have reenactments come, and traders, and people from all over the country come here now, and we've had visitors from America who've heard about it and are in England, and they've come especially to visit, and we get lots of very nice comments from visitors, so we're very pleased that we can do this on behalf of Tolkien, and we're very proud that he liked Serhol so much as a child.
Since Serhol first started celebrating Tolkien, we've been coming here, and it's grown and grown, and more people come in costume, which makes it more of an event for the children to see as well. And let's just hope it carries on for many years to come.
Well, I think it's very important for the city of Birmingham that there's an event like this that links up with Tolkien, because he's a world figure.
I think it celebrates the local author. Stratford's got Shakespeare, we've got Tolkien, we should be proud of him.
Oh, I think it's a fantastic connection, because it's not the sort of thing you think of for Birmingham, really, is it? It's a lot of the time you think it's very industrial, but it's fantastic to come to something like this. It's absolute credit to Birmingham. Well, to think that something so close to you could have inspired something so big, I mean, it's a global phenomenon.
I dressed as Seadrid today because he's one of the only ones that doesn't have a beard from it, so I thought I'd come as a younger character in the book.
My favourite character is probably the one I'm dressed as, which is the Lady Goldberry, which is the wife of Tom Bombadil, who didn't get into the films, but still brilliant.
To have a place like this, Serhol Mill, which is so important to Tolkien and inspired him in so many ways, it's wonderful. I think it appeals to everybody, because it's the good against evil and the triumph of the good. My favourite character is Aragorn. I really like him. I don't know why. He just appeals to me. He's so cool, and he gets the best looking bird in the end. So, you know, hats off to him, really.
Honestly, I think Tolkien would have been slightly perplexed at the fascination with his works. I don't think Tolkien realised just how amazing his works are, his creations.
I'm Tom Bombadil, and that's my lady wife there. No, I actually read the books before I saw the film, not like these heathens.
My friends suggested that I dress up as Gandalf, and I wasn't certain what to do, but when I sort of read up and actually walked on the field, I realised how much Gandalf was a great part of Lord of the Rings and Tolkien, you know, and everything about it was just made me realise that all these families and children were actually almost placing their hope in Gandalf, like, you know, to stand against the powers of darkness, if you like. they just want photos taken with me. They keep coming up, they're going, "Oh, you Gandalf the Wizard?" And I goes, "Yeah, yeah. Will you say something about us, you know, like a spell or something nice to encourage them?" And the touching part was a little boy one day just came up to me and said, "Can I walk alongside of you?" And he just sighed a sigh of relief and he said, "You're my hero." And that just meant so much. And from that day on, I was compelled to come as Gandalf.
"You shall not pass."
I really like the giant spider.
Why?
Because I like how spiders are normally really little and that one's like really big.
It's just a collection of people having fun. Tolkien's a good excuse. It's nice to do it in the area that inspired him. We've actually come from Kimber, which is about 3/4 of an hour's drive away, and we've got rock houses there which we think inspired the hobbit holes because they're cut into the sides of cliffs.
Okay, well, here we are on the lower level of the Holy Austin rock houses. These are where families over several hundred years have burrowed into the rock here to make homes. We're often asked if these dwellings were an inspiration for Tolkien, and while we don't have any evidence to prove that he was, it's entirely possible that he would have known about these houses. He lived in Birmingham, not too far away, and these were a known curiosity to people in the Birmingham area. And although, as I say, we don't actually have any proof, there aren't any actual records to indicate in Tolkien's own diaries or writings that he came here, but it is entirely possible. We did have the great-nephew of Tolkien, Tim Tolkien, come here last season because we wondered whether he might have any more information than we do. And although he didn't, he was interested in the property here and has said he will agree to check with the family solicitors and just make sure that there's nothing known that he could pass on to us. Of course, the area here was a popular tourist spot. Back in the 1930s, when the light railway ran here, people from the Black Country and Birmingham came out to what was known as the Little Switzerland. And so it's entirely likely that Tolkien would have certainly seen newspaper articles about the place and would have known about the houses here, even if he didn't visit.
Air iron was found, or tree was hewn, when young was mountain under moon. Ere ring was made, or wrought was woe, it walked the forests long ago.
I'm sitting here in the bar of the Plough and Harrow Hotel in Edgbaston, Birmingham. There's a family party over there, a few people having coffee. But I'm talking to Dr. Chris Upton, historian and Tolkien specialist. Chris, what do you think is the link between Birmingham, the Plough and Harrow Hotel, and the Lord of the Rings?
Well, Tolkien spent 14 years in Birmingham, from the age of 4 up till the time he went to university. And the Plough and Harrow was where he spent the only night of his honeymoon before going off to war on the front in the First World War.
That was in June 1916.
That's right.
So he fought in the Battle of the Somme?
He was at the Somme. He wasn't on the front line, but he was certainly involved. And it took mental toll, I think, for much of his life afterwards. Two of his great friends were killed in the war, and they were already working, as it were, on a project of literature and fantasy literature. And I think what gave him the motivation to continue as much as he did was partly to finish the unfinished work that his circle of friends had started. But Tolkien himself admitted that the First World War was a much greater influence on Lord of the Rings than the Second was, even though it was being written at the time of World War II.
With all the publicity and the interest in Tolkien worldwide, people really just don't realise these important monuments to him actually in a city like Birmingham. Nobody seems to know about it.
I suppose it's inevitable that books that are written at least partly with children in mind, and in The Hobbit entirely in children in mind, should derive their inspiration from his childhood and early adolescence. So those are the years that fix in a writer's mind anyway, aren't they?
I believe Tolkien lived in 8 different locations in Birmingham.
Yes, 8 in 14 years is extraordinary, isn't it? And it all comes down to Tolkien's mother, Mabel. And she converted to Catholicism when Tolkien was just 8 years old, and was in search of a Catholic church that she felt comfortable with. So she kept moving. She was a single parent by then, so just mum and the two sons were moving around the city looking for that church that she felt happy with, and that took her to King's Heath and eventually took her to Edgbaston or Ladywood, where the Oratory Church just down the road from the Plough and Harrow was the church she was most happy with. So most of the houses were for that reason, and then of course because Mabel died very early, she died of diabetes, J.R.R. and his brother were then orphans and looked after by the priest at the Oratory and other foster parents who shepherded them from house to house before he left for university.
Well, the Oratory is just down the road, less than 5 minutes walk away. Let's go and take a look.
Hello, my name is Philip Benjamin Coker. I'm the community librarian at Wheelie Castle Library, and I guess I have to say I'm a bit of a Tolkien fan. Here at Wheelie Castle Library, we've put up a display to coincide with the release of the film of The Hobbit. And as you can see, we've got most of Tolkien's works here. Everything from his academic works like The Monster and the Critics through to his fantasy works like Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, The Silmarillion. Yes, I can remember when I was inspired by Tolkien. It was through reading The Hobbit and then The Lord of the Rings as bedtime stories to my daughter. So I came to him quite late, really. And I used to read it to her every night, and she'd drop off to sleep and I'd carry on reading. And then the next night I'd have to go back and to the place where she was when she fell asleep. So I got a really good reading of it that first time. The films, I think that Peter Jackson did a really good job. I was definitely sceptical about the films, particularly after seeing that terrible cartoon version that came out. And, I've got one friend who, even after the film had come out and I'd seen it and thought, Peter Jackson's done a good job here, she wouldn't look at it at all. And the one day she came around and she was talking to my wife, and I just slipped the DVD on and didn't say anything. It was sort of on, and she started watching it, and now apparently she watches it every single week. Every time I read Lord of the Rings, more so than The Hobbit, like I've already said, The Hobbit is really a children's book, and I will read it again. In fact, I've read it this year again. I guess I've read it maybe 4 or 5 times from beginning to end. Lord of the Rings, on the other hand, is perennial. I mean, I read Lord of the Rings at least once a year. I don't mean to. I pick it up and start reading it, and the next thing I know is I'm into the Two Towers, and then I'm into the Fellowship. There is so much in there. I mean, it has such a wonderful depth. I mean, he's a great storyteller. He manages to tell you a story that on the surface seems like a boy's own story, but underneath it, you know. I wouldn't say it's the greatest book of the 20th century, but it's got to be up there with all the really great works.
One ring to rule them all. One ring to find them. One ring to bring them all and in the darkness bind them.
Well, we've just walked up the road a little bit, Chris, and here we are actually in the Oratory on a very cold day. And this, of course, is very important to Tolkien.
Tolkien's mother converted to Catholicism, and Tolkien remained Catholic for the rest of his life. After Mabel Tolkien's death, after his mother's death, it was Father Morgan, one of the priests at the Oratory, who took the two sons, Hilary and John Ronald, under his wing and looked after them and found them lodgings. He was quite a fierce chap, I think. He looked after them sternly. It was clearly a huge influence, and those two influences, his mother and the Catholic Church, remain central to Tolkien for the rest of his life.
Hi, I'm Tim Tolkien. I'm the great nephew of J.R.R. Tolkien, the writer of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. I knew, as we knew him, Uncle Ronald, when I was very young. He died when I was 11, so I only really have memories of him as an interesting elderly brother of my grandfather and meeting him at parties. And he was a slightly larger-than-life character, but he did used to like spending time with us children as well as talking to the adults. And I think at that time, he was only just starting to become famous, if you know what I mean. He'd been very much an applied professor for a long, long time and recognised within his own circles, but he was starting to get popularity by the 1970s. His books had found a niche. The fantasy stuff had found a niche in the 60s and the 70s, so he was starting to be popular and thought of as a popular person. But I think in a lot of ways it didn't sit easily with him. I don't think he was an easily a famous person. So I think he would probably be proud, but a bit surprised of all this attention that's gone on since then.
Far over the misty mountains rise, leave us standing upon the height. What was before?
Being a member of the Tolkien family and living back in the area where he and my grandfather grew up means that if anything is going on to do with J.R.R. Tolkien, I'm one of the first people in the phone book that gets a phone call. I mean, it's great, but it's one of those things that one carries with, which has mixed blessings. But obviously I'm very proud to live in this area and be part of that great legacy. It's questionable how much or how little his time in this area meant to him. It was early on in his development too, so some ways fundamental, in some ways it only sparked things off, and the rest of that development was his own work and in his mind.
My name's Helen Cross and I'm an author living in Birmingham, and I'm standing here on a very wet and dreary December day on Wake Green Road in South Birmingham, outside 264 Wake Green Road, which is where Tolkien lived as a small boy and where much of his interest in Hobbiton began. As an author, I think your location you live in as a child stays with you forever. It becomes almost like the dreamscape of your mind that you return to when you're thinking creatively. And Tolkien talked very much about his childhood as being the leaf mulch of the mind, which is where creative imagination and inspiration comes from. And he talked in great detail about how this area had provided much rich inspiration for him all his life. It's a very built-up area around here now, but when Tolkien was a boy, looking out of his house, you would see directly across rolling fields to Sarehole Mill. And it's very touching, actually, to see that there are still places that have been inspired by Tolkien's work. Just up to the left is the Hungry Hobbit Cafe, and there's little things that if Tolkien were to walk down here today, he'd be amazed to see how his influence had spread around the area.
My name is Brian Gambles. I'm responsible for the Library of Birmingham, the project and the service and the collections. And the collections, of course, cover a lot of the contextual material that locates Tolkien as one of the great popular authors of the 20th century in the place where he lived much of his young life, went to school, and which provided the inspiration for the settings for The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I think it's hugely important that we maintain and develop collections which provide the context for literary inspiration and that background to an author and his works, which is so important, the formative years, the environment, the changing environment in which an author grew up. And Tolkien, of course, was famously hugely influenced by the Birmingham that he grew up in, the changes that he saw in the city, and the physical features that provided much of the inspiration for his stories. The library has huge collections of documentary photographic collections which provide the context for the changing city and indeed the changing counties surrounding the city, the urban and the rural environment, that would have been such an influence on Tolkien. And we know this, of course, from his work, that the that gradual change from predominantly rural to a much more assertively urban society does feature very heavily in his works. I'd like to mention Maggie Burns, who was a librarian on our staff for many years and a huge enthusiast and indeed an acknowledged authority on Tolkien, many aspects of Tolkien. She wrote extensively on him, presented papers. Maggie was one of the breed of librarians who are hugely passionate and knowledgeable about her subject. Sadly, she passed away at a tragically young age earlier this year, and we miss her and her expertise very much.
Now, this was farmland, not this bit, but all the fields around, and they weren't really supposed to go in the middle of the fields, and the farmers would shout at them.
So my name's Chris Upton. I'm a historian and interested in the literary connections between Birmingham and the literary world, and this is a really important spot. We're looking at the house in Westbourne Road, which was the last house Tolkien lived in Birmingham shortly before going to Oxford, and right opposite the Plough and Harrow, close to the Oratory, and on a tram route that took him into King Edward's School in the centre of Birmingham. The Plough and Harrow is a really old hotel and goes back into the 1700s in parts. Most of what we're looking at is Victorian or some cases later, but it was always the grand hotel in Birmingham there for centuries. It was the place to stay. So staying here before the Somme was the lap of luxury for Tolkien. So this part of Ladywood was very important to Tolkien in, for the rest of his life, and certainly when he was writing his books. We've got the two towers that were the inspiration for the second volume of Lord of the Rings, the houses he lived in. There was Samson Gamgee, who appears as Sam Gamgee, who was a surgeon. Tolkien knew his widow, who lived in Stirling Road. So his 3 or 4 years around these streets on his way into town to go to the grammar school were something he remembered the rest of his life. We're in Plough and Harrow Road alongside the hotel, and you can see the two towers in front of us, Perrott's Folly, the 18th century one, and then the more elaborate tower of Edgbaston Waterworks behind it. Birmingham's always been proud of its Tolkien connections. There are four plaques to him in the city, two of which are very close to us here. One on the front of the Plough and Harrow, one in Westbourne Road, the last house he lived in before going to Oxford University.
I'm Larry Rue, and we're here to celebrate Tolkien's presence in Birmingham. Now let's head back to Middle Earth Weekend in Moseley and hear from Vivian Wilkes, the chairman of the Middle Earth Organising Group.
We're celebrating 75 years since The Hobbit was published this year, and the films are coming out, of course, in December, so we thought it was a nice thing to do to raise the profile of Tolkien in Birmingham. We've been going 13 years now, and we are the only event, I think, that acknowledges Tolkien's importance to Birmingham. He lived not far from Sarehole Mill, and the years that he lived here were amongst the happiest of his life. And he could roam here quite freely. He and his brother wandered along the River Cole, through the fords, and this area had a profound impact on his stories. After all, the mill is the mill in Hobbiton. We have the fords and the fords of Brunan, where the Black Riders were carried away. And in fact, if you've ever watched the River Cole in flood, you can easily understand how his imagination would have worked at that time, because cars do get carried away. He was a Birmingham man. He always considered himself a Birmingham man, and he lived in 9 different homes in Birmingham. So we feel it's very important that this be acknowledged, and we're very proud and privileged to be able to put on such an event that acknowledges that importance. And so it's just a pleasure to be able to put on an event like this.
I'm a member of the Isengard Smile, that's S-M-I-A-L. So that's one of the local groupings of the Tolkien Society. So there's lots of groupings throughout the country, throughout the world, in fact. And they've each got their own name. So this is Isengard, the local one that meets in Birmingham once a month for good food and good cheer and good company. I guess it's a time for everybody to get together, meet other fans, look at some fun, fancy dresses, look at some of the craft work and share thoughts about the books, perhaps read stories, hear stories and poems from the books, and learn a bit about Tolkien's Birmingham, because although all the action is in New Zealand and everybody thinks about New Zealand for Lord of the Rings, of course it really began here in Moseley in Birmingham.
I've been to New Zealand to Matamata, where the last remaining part of the set was for the opening of the first of the trilogy, but I do feel that Birmingham is overlooked in many respects in terms of its absolute importance, and probably the most important sort of reason for him coming up with this fantastic story.
My name's Phil Lovell. I play Gandalf, who is the wizard.
We're in Moseley Bog, which is one of the playgrounds of the young Tolkien. And we present extracts from The Hobbit in locations that J.R.R. Tolkien would have played and where he got inspiration from. And when we first came to do this, we had a look round, and it was very obvious that some parts were indeed, there was Weathertop. You can see where Weathertop is, and you can see where some of the Dales and part of the Shire are. And you're just in his realm, and it's a fascinating place.
I am one of the trolls, in particular William. I am a Lord of the Rings fan. I've watched all of the movies. I've read The Hobbit, but I haven't read any of the other Lord of the Rings yet. I'm planning to do that soon.
I come from Howl's Own, which is in Birmingham. I first came across Tolkien when I was a schoolboy. Quite a long time ago. The teachers read us The Hobbit, and I was sort of hooked from there on.
Ashnazgadur Batuluk, Ashnazgimbatul, Ashnazgthrakatuluk, Aghburzon Misi Krimpatul.
My name is Sergeant Tom O'Keefe. I'm the neighbourhood sergeant for Hall Green Neighbourhood Team. And Sarehole Mill in this event sits within the area I cover. The event's an annual event. It gets slightly bigger every year. It certainly shows off not only Hall Green, but obviously the wider aspects of Birmingham, because certainly we have people who visit us yesterday and today from all over the country.
Have you had any drunken orcs or, you know, unruly wizards?
No, there's been a few wizards who've clearly had too many hot dogs, I would suggest. We don't usually suffer with orcs. We've had a few tussles with the Vikings in the past few years, but other than that, no, everything's been fine and good natured. The reason it's here, of course, is Sarehole Mill, the Dingles, Tolkien lived around here, and certainly the books, The Lord of the Rings, as I read it as a child, were set based on this area in. So it's absolutely crucial, almost, the Tolkien event has been held at almost the centre of the Tolkien world, so to speak, because after all, this is where it all started.
To have this somewhere else, it wouldn't have the effect and the impact. And I believe the young generation of today will take this, and it will keep Tolkien's memory and everything about Tolkien alive.
I think much more could be made of the connection between Tolkien and Birmingham. He's perhaps most famously associated with Oxford as the place where he lived and worked for the majority of his adult life. But that does overlook the hugely formative influence of the 20 years or so that he spent in Birmingham before he left for Oxford and his academic career. And I think it is important that we recognise the influences on a young child growing up, studying in the city, and how he saw that changing before his eyes.
My name's Sean, I'm the Tolkien Society's trustee and publicity officer. The Tolkien Society's job is to educate the public on the works and life of J.R.R. Tolkien. And what we do is we hold events regularly in Birmingham and in Oxford and around the country. We've got members from all over the world, from mostly in England, Scotland, Wales, but also many members in the United States, in Canada, in South Africa, in Australia, New Zealand, who all work together in this collective fellowship to help promote J.R.R. Tolkien and his wonderful stories, The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, The Silmarillion, and all those other books we all love and know and love. Most members of the Tolkien Society absolutely love the films. We're all eagerly anticipating The Hobbit later this year. I'm sure we all have the extended editions of The Lord of the Rings sitting on our DVD's bookshelf. However, not all members are fans of the films because they feel that Peter Jackson and the other filmmakers took certain liberties in the production of the film. I personally don't share that view. I feel that the films were a fantastic piece of cinema. Absolutely groundbreaking techniques were used to make them, and they brought so many people to us, to the Tolkien Society, and to J.R.R. Tolkien's works that I'd never before read them. I think that's something that we should encourage. The Tolkien Society is here every year in the middle of May, and we hope that Middle-earth Weekend gets bigger and better every single year. We reckon we've had well over 10,000 visitors over these 2 days, and we look forward to welcoming more and more people next year, and I will shake them warmly by the hand myself.
Now we're back outside the Plough and Harrow Hotel, in the car park on a very cold Birmingham evening. On the way here, I couldn't miss the posters and billboards all over the city for The Hobbit. No one's denying the amazing talent of Jackson and his team at Weta, and Wellington can be rightfully proud of bringing Tolkien's creations to the screen. But let's not forget Birmingham's important role in shaping the world of Middle-earth. Without Birmingham, there probably wouldn't be The Hobbit.
From misty mountains cold.